the changes to the capital gains inclusion rate were a bit of a surprise.
Welcome to Views from the Desk, a special edition of the BMO ETFs podcast. In these timely episodes, we provide the latest investment news and commentary on the markets, the economy, and investing. Brought to you by BMO Global Asset Management.
In today's deep dive episode, John Waters and your host, Aaron Allen, discuss the key takeaways from Ottawa's recently released 2024 federal budget, breaking down capital gains, tax changes, measures affecting registered plans, and other notable proposals, and what it could mean for you. Before we hear from the team, please consider subscribing to Views from the Desk on your preferred podcast platform. And for many more ETF insights and resources, visit BMOETFs.com. That's BMOETFs.com.
Hello and welcome back to BMO ETF's Weekly Insights podcast. I'm today's host, Aaron Allen, VP of Online Distribution with BMO ETFs. Today, we'll be taking a first look at the 2024 Canadian federal budget with John Waters, Vice President and Director of Tax Consulting Services at BMO Private Wealth. John has over two decades of planning experience. He acts as a trusted resource, leading high-level discussions, presenting tax seminars, and writing timely commentaries on emerging developments in his field. John, I know it's been a really busy week for you this week, so I appreciate you taking the next 30 minutes to walk us through the budget.
It's my pleasure, Aaron. Happy to be here.
I understand you're also part of the budget lockup period, which for those of you who aren't familiar, happens right before the budget's released. And they actually lock you guys up, a bunch of stakeholders, government officials, reporters, business leaders, at a set venue, and you have time to sort of preview the budget and pose questions to the finance minister and such. Insider access you get.
Yeah, it's always fun to go down there and be part of it. And I've always described the atmosphere as, you know, back in, like being back in university and just before that big exam, and you see all your friends and colleagues before and wondering what's going to be on the exam that day. And, you know, this is now, well, what's going to be in the budget? We have some thoughts going in, but obviously there's always some surprises.
For sure. And before we get started today, I just wanted to give a quick reminder to our listeners that we're not providing tax or investment advice. Today is all about providing education and information around that budget. So the title of the budget was Fairness for Every Generation, an attempt to restore generational fairness by really targeting the wealthy. So clearly the main goal was at getting at this housing spending by applying tax measures to the wealthy. Lots was announced. We can't possibly cover it all, but we're going to target sort of the most important things we see from an individual perspective. So John, let's start with the main headline, that increase to the capital gains inclusion rate from one half to two thirds. Can you walk us through this in more detail? How does this change really work?
Yeah, so just to step back, so of course, capital gains are when you sell an investment or a real estate property, for example, and you have a cost base, which you paid to purchase that investment, and you sell it, the proceeds that you receive. So of course, the difference between those two amounts is a capital gain or loss, I suppose, if the cost is exceeded by the proceeds. And under the Canadian tax law, currently, and it has been the case for quite a number of years, only 50% of that capital gain comes into your taxable income. So what's being proposed in the budget that was released earlier this week is that 50% factor will now increase to a two-thirds factor. So approximately 66% of that capital gain will now be included in your taxable income. Now, I should point out that this is scheduled to take place for sales or dispositions on or after June 25th of 2024. And it'll come into effect from $1 of capital gains for corporations and trusts. So that's all corporations. That includes, investment holding companies, professional corporations, etc. But for individuals, it's only going to affect the wealthier investors or Canadians. In particular, you would have to have at least $250,000 of capital gains in a given year to have this higher rate take effect again after on or after June 25th of this year.
So investors are probably thinking, do I sell in the near term or might this inclusion rate come down? We're not really here to, I guess, speculate on that or provide advice around that, but definitely probably something that people are thinking about. How much does the government actually expect this is going to bring in?
Well, it is their main revenue enhancement, I guess, coming out of the budget. The budget documents actually quoted a total over the next 5 years of about $20 billion of increased tax revenue from this change, slightly more than half coming from corporations and trusts, and about $9 million of that from individuals over the next 5 years. And in their estimate, the bulk of that, well, a good chunk of that would come in 2024, I guess, under the premise of potentially people looking to sell now before the rate increases. That number would decline for the next couple of years and then increase in the fourth and the fifth year. So pretty significant revenue, again, $20 billion over 5 years is the estimate.
So talk to us a bit about, you know, capital gains being one of the more tax efficient forms of income and then dividends. How is that sort of spread between the two evolving over time?
Yeah, that has been the case for many years. I mean, many people will probably recall that 20 years or so ago, the capital gains inclusion rate was 75% and previously 66% as well, what it's reverting to. So at that point, there was more alignment between the tax rates across other forms of income. Certainly since that period, the last 20 years or so, I think actually the change was in the year 2000, so almost 25 years, capital gains have been taxed at a somewhat lower rate than dividends, for instance, or for that matter, employment income. So that obviously with this change, that gap is narrowing. So and I'm focusing on the top tax, top marginal tax rate, you know, where most that would see this impact because of the $250,000 threshold. So, for instance, in Ontario, the top rate on dividends, eligible dividends, is 39% currently. The top rate, top marginal rate on capital gains going forward after this change will be just slightly under 36%, whereas currently it's about 27%. So right now, you know, fairly sizable gap, 12%, but that gap is going to only be 3 or 4%. You know, similar amounts in the other provinces as well. Alberta, the gap will go to 32% for capital gains, 34% dividends at the top rate. BC, about 36% for both. And Quebec, for instance, about 36% at the top marginal rate for capital gains and about 40% for eligible dividends. So a slight gap there as well.
All right. Good to know. And you mentioned this is definitely targeting the wealthy, a small percentage of the population. But I'm also hearing in the media that there is sort of this middle class in terms of property, right? Like if anybody owns a cottage or a secondary rental property or that type of thing. Talk to us a bit more about the total impact.
That was sort of the messaging. I think in the government documents, there was reference to approximately 40,000 individuals that they would expect to be impacted, or about, was I think, 0.13% of the Canadian population. But yeah, to your point, I think certainly a lot more than those individuals would have to be concerned about this measure. If you're selling a rental property, if you're a second home within the family, of course, we've got the principal residence exemption that still exists and is not impacted by these changes. But if there's a second property, be it a residential property or rental property, and obviously a gain could be in excess of that amount or, you know, when accumulated with other gains. So those individuals would have to be concerned and have to do some planning around this. So it is probably much more pervasive than those 40,000 individuals. I would mention too, investment holding companies are a big thing. So many people might have investments personally, but they also might have them within a corporate structure for many reasons. And of course, that change is happening from $1. So, you know, a lot of I've already got many questions about investment holding companies.
And what about employee stock options? How do they play into this?
Very similar. You know, technically, employee stock options under the tax legislation are not capital gains. So they could not be offset by capital losses, for instance. But the taxation is very similar because in many cases, you have a taxable benefit equal to what you acquire the stock at and what it's trading at when you acquire it, the fair market value. That difference is considered a taxable benefit. In many cases, although it's been scaled back the last few years, there is the ability to get currently a 50% deduction to, you know, reduce your net income to a 50% inclusion, similar to a capital gain. The changes that are being proposed for capital gains will also affect that taxable benefit for stock options. So instead of the 50% net inclusion, we will have a 66% net inclusion. So the deduction for the stock option benefit would be reduced to 1/3. I should also mention that the $250,000 threshold would have to be shared in a given year. For an individual who has capital gains and stock options, it would be the total of those in excess of the $250,000 that would be potentially subject to this higher capital gains inclusion rate.
And a lot of our listeners are ETF investors or mutual fund investors. So how is this going to impact them?
Most ETFs, mutual funds would typically take the income that they've earned, the net income that they've earned within the portfolio, within the fund, and allocate that to the investors, the unit holders. So, of course, as everyone knows, there's different types of income generated, and they would generally retain that character when paid out to a Canadian investor. So oftentimes, of course, there would be capital gains that have been realized and allocated out to the investors. So any of those capital gains that are being realized are potentially subject to the change with the inclusion rate, again, over that threshold of $250,000. And just to be clear, if someone has, say, $251,000 of capital gains in a given year, it's only that incremental $1,000 that would be subject to the higher inclusion rate, and everything $250,000 and below would still be subject to that 50% inclusion rate for an individual.
Right. That's good to clarify. And then moving on to another change, the lifetime capital gains exemption for individuals was increased. So walk us through the details around that.
Yeah, this is sort of the flip side to the increase in the capital gains inclusion rate, is that there was also an increase, also taking effect on this magical June 25th date, that the capital gains exemption will be increasing from approximately $1 million to $1.25 million. And just to explain that briefly, is that this capital gains exemption is only available on very limited sets of property, most notably shares of a private business that is involved in an active business. So, you know, as opposed to investment hold co, which is considered a passive asset, it's more, you know, manufacturing, professional corporation type of business. So those shares, when sold, could potentially be eligible for this lifetime capital gains exemption. So that amount is going up approximately $250,000 to shelter that much more capital gains tax on a sale.
A little bit of silver lining there. And then changes to the alternative minimum tax. I think this is something that was changes were announced last year as well. But walk us through the update here and the details around those changes.
So the alternative minimum tax is... it's been around since 1986, and so it's not new, but there were some important changes that were announced in last year's budget. And the focus of last year's budget was to ensure that wealthier Canadians, Canadians with more significant levels of income, who are claiming significant deductions, expenses, credits, et cetera, will have to pay at least a minimum amount of tax, notwithstanding that their regular taxable income might be low or their regular tax might be low. So it's a parallel calculation that takes into account many of these deductions and credits and adds, in some cases, all or a portion of these expenses back in the separate calculation. And it also changes the income inclusions for the purposes of the separate calculation. So as we know, you know, historically, capital gains have been taxed at 50% income inclusion. For the purposes of this parallel tax calculation, the alternative minimum tax calculation, the full amount of the capital gains is included in that. So in essence, you run these two parallel calculations, you come up with your regular tax, and for the alternative minimum tax, you come up with a revised taxable income amount, and you apply a basic amount of federal tax at a rate now of 20.5%. That was previously 15% under the old rules for AMT. And you compare the calculation of that alternative minimum tax to what you're paying under the regular tax. And to the extent that the alternative minimum tax calculation exceeds your regular income tax, you pay that excess. So you pay the minimum of the two. What changed last year, in addition to some of those tweaks that I mentioned, but really the focus was to ensure that higher income Canadians are paying that minimum amount of tax, notwithstanding some of the deductions or credits, significant deductions or credits that may be claimed. So the focus was really not for the average Canadian. Most people won't be affected by this, but for incomes, say, of greater than 300,000. Now, when those rules were proposed last year, there was great concern, particularly in the charitable community, because one of the add backs for the AMT calculation was charitable donations. And, you know, normally for regular income tax purposes, of course, the full amount of the credit is available. But for AMT purposes, it was proposed to only be 50% of the credit that would otherwise apply. And so you could end up in a situation, particularly for individuals that were donating shares of publicly traded companies and getting that zero capital gains income inclusion for regular purposes, and then getting the full amount of that donation could, you know, shelter a good amount of tax. But because of the changes that were proposed, particularly to the donations, there were many scenarios that would cause the AMT to kick in and cause that individual donor to pay a higher level of tax. So great concerns expressed by the charitable community. And those were, fortunately, they were addressed in the 2024 federal budget earlier this week by changing the calculation of that separate AMT a tax to allow for 80% of charitable donations to be deducted for that separate calculation, as opposed to the 50% proposed. So going a long way to deal with some of those concerns. Again, still an issue, still something to be concerned about for individuals with large donations, but certainly would lessen the impact.
And let's change over to registered plans, because I know there was some announcements about the home buyers plan changes, getting that next generation buying homes again. So walk us through some of the changes there.
Yeah, the main announcement for the registered plans was the changes to the home buyers plan. And this was actually telegraphed about a week or so before the budget. And so there's the ability under the home buyers plan to withdraw, I guess previously it was $35,000 from your RSP and have that come out tax-free. And then having to repay that over a 15-year period beginning in the second year after the withdrawal. So what was put forward in the budget was to increase that limit from $35,000 up to $60,000, so an increase of $25,000, and delaying the time frame of when you have to start doing the repayment back to your RSP to the fifth year. So adding three more years before you actually have to start paying this back to your RSP, again, over that 15-year period. So yeah, certainly some positive changes for individuals who are looking to buy a house. You can take more money out and have to repay it over a longer period. And, you know, keep in mind that these amounts could be doubled up if you're in a relationship and have a partner that is also eligible.
A lot around housing in the budget, new plans to take over government lands, post offices, I was reading, 30-year yes. mortgages for first-time homebuyers. Any surprises coming out of the budget from your side that you wanted to touch on?
I would say that the capital gains inclusion rate change was a bit of a surprise. I think the tax community you know, that's a perennial rumor that's been in existence certainly since the beginning of this Liberal government. But it, you know, hadn't been introduced, hadn't really even been talked about by the government. So that was maybe a bit of a surprise, especially since last year with the changes to the alternative minimum tax that I outlined, is that that was sort of a backwards way of going after higher net worth Canadians that had significant capital gains. So, you know, the changes to the capital gains inclusion rate were a bit of a surprise. But yeah, that would be the main thing. I know that there was some concern leading up to the budget, particularly in the maybe the week or the few days before, that there could be some other drastic measures because of all the housing announcements that came before and all the spending initiatives. And so we knew that there was going to be some form of a, you know, a tax revenue increase. It was just trying to speculate on what that could be. There was talk of, you know, a wealth tax. There was talk of an excess profits tax, potential new tax bracket at a higher income level, things like that. But those didn't happen. But instead, we got that capital gains inclusion rate.
And these things typically don't go backwards, right? We're not going to see this reduced.
Who knows what the future holds? But certainly, you know, if the budget is passed, which is certainly the expectation with the NDP supporting it, this will go through. And then, you know, we'll see what happens from here on in. As I mentioned, the capital gains rate inclusion rate has bounced around, and it previously was at higher amounts. And now that was, I say, almost 25 years ago. So we'll see what the future holds.
Any other smaller announced changes that you could highlight?
Yeah, I think the only other things that I would highlight would probably be related to business owners and entrepreneurs. You know, we talked about the increased capital gains exemption. There was also another incentive for business owners. They could access, in addition to the capital gains exemption on qualifying businesses, they could potentially access a lower capital gains rate on the sale of a business that they own and that they're actively involved in, to achieve, you know, a lower tax bill on the sale. That's being phased in over a period of 10 years. It's a bit more restrictive and excludes certain industries, so it's not as widespread. And another tax change related to business owners would be the introduction of an incentive, another capital gains exemption when you sell your business to an employee ownership trust. So basically selling to the employees to buy you out. There's the ability to get up to a $10 million exemption on the sale of shares to that employee ownership trust. So for some businesses, certainly worthwhile, but obviously not as widespread as the changes to the capital gains inclusion rate.
Awesome. Well, thanks, John, for all your insights around this budget and great breakdown of the impacts that investors are going to be feeling in the years to come. And thanks again for taking the time out of your busy week this week for us.
My pleasure, Aaron. Thank you.
Thank you to Aaron Allen and John Waters for joining us on the BMO ETFs podcast. For more information about the 2024 federal budget, check out the episode notes to download a comprehensive review. Have questions about ETFs? Contact your regional BMO ETF specialist or visit the ETF Center at BMOETFs.com. That's BMOETFS.com.
Views from the Desk has been brought to you by BMO Global Asset Management.
The viewpoints expressed by the portfolio managers represent their assessment of the markets at the time of publication. Those views are subject to change without notice at any time without any kind of notice. The information contained herein is not and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice to any party. Investments should be evaluated relative to the individual's investment objectives, and professional advice should be obtained with respect to any circumstance. Any statement that necessarily depends on future events may be a forward-looking statement. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. Commissions, management fees, and expenses, if any, all may be associated with investments in exchange-traded funds. Please read the ETF facts or prospectus before investing. Exchange-traded funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently and past performance may not be repeated. BMO Global Asset Management is a brand name under which BMO Asset Management, Inc. and BMO Investments, Inc. operate.